You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello and welcome to your daily On The Money news and markets update for this Thursday, the 15th of August. I'm Raina Bosch, filling in for Ricardo Gonçalves. Our special CEO series continues today with Cochlear CEO Dig Howitt. But before we get into those results, let's talk Telstra. Australia's biggest telco was the headliner of today's results. Its profits down 13% for the last financial year to $1.78 billion. That was due in part to troubles in its enterprise business and costs associated with those 2,800 job cuts in May, which were revealed to have cost the company $247 million. Still, the telco did see some growth as it added 560,000 new customers to its mobile business. And with price rises on their way for the majority of those new and existing customers, their share price also rose to be up 2.1% by the close. Shares in hearing implant supplier Cochlear, meanwhile, fell despite profits rising. For more on that, Raina Sarampayat spoke with Cochlear CEO Dig Howitt.
Yeah, the biggest driver of the result was progress we're making in creating referral paths for adults and seniors with significant hearing loss to get through to cochlear implants. And that's where our big long-run growth opportunity is, that fewer than 5% of adults and seniors in the developed world whose hearing would benefit from a cochlear implant actually get access to one at the moment. And most of that is because people don't treat hearing loss as seriously as other medical conditions, and there aren't clear referral paths for adults. Contrast that with children, where there's very clear referral paths for children born with hearing loss. They're screened at birth, they're immediately referred on for treatment, and consequently a very, very high proportion of children in Australia and most developed countries around the world get access to cochlear implants.
Today, the share price did fall after the announcement. It looks like the growth outlook did disappoint the market.
Our share price jumps around on results. I'm used to it by now. We're running the business with a really long-term goal of helping more and more people get access to sound and access to cochlear implants. We obviously look at the share price, but we don't track it day to day.
Now, when you spoke to SBS On The Money this time last year, you spoke of the recovery in clinical care, somewhat of a catch-up in surgeries post-COVID. Are things back at pre-COVID levels now, or, as you say, there's still plenty of unmet demand?
So the actual volumes are well above pre-COVID. In 23, we saw a recovery in volume, which led to a good result then. That volume growth through more people being aware of treatments for hearing loss continued through the last year. So we're certainly pleased to see that happening and that demand continue to be there.
Let's talk about the Chinese market. You've had a factory there for some years. How is that going? And what implications for global supply and potentially for prices?
Yeah, so we decided to build a factory in China in 2017 and started construction in 2018. The factory started producing last year. It takes a while to build and get the regulatory approvals. We've still got some more approvals to come, we hope, later this year. So we're ramping up volume in the factory. At the moment, that factory is just supplying China, but it certainly has the potential to supply other countries as well as China. But again, this we run the business with a long-term view. This factory was built with thinking forward over the next 30 years, and particularly looking at the demand for cochlear implants in China. We look at the number of people with hearing loss and the size of the population, growing wealth. And just in the last few weeks, the national government in China has released a paper on the importance of older people with hearing loss getting their hearing screened and getting treatment, and the importance of that for their cognitive health as well as their overall health. So we see long-run potential in China, and that's the core reason we built the factory there.
Let's return to Australia now. And we know Federal Labor is proposing what they call a Future Made in Australia plan. There are seven co-investment programs, medical science being one. What do you understand the government is proposing?
The government is rightly showing a strong interest in manufacturing in Australia. I think with these seven areas is trying to look at areas where Australia has some potential benefit There's some natural advantage that we have, which we clearly do in medical devices and biologics. Australia has a great record there. So I think that they're rightly trying to stimulate manufacturing. I think one of the things that's really important is that we make sure we also focus on the fundamentals. I mean, the key to any manufacturing is being in an internationally competitive environment. And that means you've got to be able to build factories, be able to build them quickly, be able to build them at costs that are comparable with the rest of the world. It means having regulation that is comparable with the rest of the world and not creating a greater burden by being in Australia than in other countries. And we need a tax system that encourages investment and innovation. That getting those fundamentals right is the most important thing we can do to continue to manufacture in Australia and to expand our manufacturing in Australia.
So what do you say the government should do that it's not doing now?
Yeah, look, I think two things, and we've been saying this for a while to governments in Australia for some time, and we're not the only ones. We do need to look at our tax system. It is an inefficient tax system that focuses heavily on income tax and company tax as a source of revenue. These are known to be not very productive taxes and not encourage innovation and aspiration. And then when we look at regulation, we do need to regulate, and we've got to make sure we have sensible regulation for sure. What we should be thinking a bit smarter about is how can we make regulation productive, achieve its aims, but also be efficient to in terms of compliance. You know, there's an increasing burden on companies to generate all sorts of reports on really important topics, but it's not clear that those reports actually change outcomes versus other ways of managing regulation.
You said earlier that referral paths are working well for children, but not the elderly. Why that difference?
I think as much as anything, it's a matter of time. So those referral paths for children didn't exist 20 years ago. Or 25 years ago. But once people saw the benefits of treating children with cochlear implants, they saw the outcomes that were there, then it became the standard of care, the standard practice for newborn hearing screening and very clear referral paths. So it was about having the clinical evidence, having the showing the importance of treating hearing loss, which is, you know, for a child, for a baby born with hearing loss who would have the opportunity to hear with an implant, most parents want that to happen and happen quickly. For hearing loss as we age, we typically see that in society as a natural part of ageing. Your hair goes grey or it falls out and your hearing gets worse, and that just happens over time. What we want to change is say, but this is treatable. And not only is it treatable, it's critical to treat for your health as you age. So what we would like to see is there to be screening for people beyond a certain age for hearing loss, which there are for a range of other medical conditions. Then, based on the results of that screen, a clear path for referral to a medical professional who can explain the range of potential treatment options for individuals.
We asked you last year about AI. What advances have you made in that space in the past year?
Look, we're working in a number of areas on artificial intelligence. We think that one of the significant opportunities is in our products and in helping people once they have an implant. So once someone has a cochlear implant, they depend on that implant for life, for hearing, and sometimes that implant needs to be tuned or changed over their lifetime. There's an opportunity for artificial intelligence potentially to help with that in time. And certainly one of the things that with a hearing aid or a cochlear implant that we try to do is to reduce background noise and to filter unwanted noises so people can hear the sounds that they want to hear. There's a role for artificial intelligence in that as well. We're doing some research in that area. And there are various parts of the company, say around in knowledge management, in some document generation where there's opportunities for AI. So I think like every company, there's lots of different things we can do. We want to move very carefully. We also want to stay focused on the areas of high value.
That was Raina Sarampayat speaking with Cochlear CEO Dig Howitt. Locally, the share market reacted to some mixed news in the July jobs figures, which added to speculation around the Reserve Bank's next moves. More on that. Plus, what's happening in the mining sector? I spoke with Jonathan Takadena. He's the head of trading at MPC Markets.
So earnings season is now well underway, and generally the stocks that had good momentum going into this season, and we had that pullback last week around that Monday. But what's happened is that markets have rebounded and continue the rally. So consumer discretionary stocks, especially the market darlings that were the flavor of the week previously, Lovisa, Wesfarmers, JB Hi-Fi, have all had made new highs, and it looks like they'll continue to keep this rally going.
Yeah, you mentioned reporting season there, and that's obviously been a key focus today. We've got some big dogs reporting, Origin, Cochlear, Telstra among them, Goodman Group as well. Who are the standouts for you today?
Okay, so out of the four that were in that list, Telstra is the one that's actually surprised to the upside. So it's up nearly about 3% for the day, and that's actually kind of a decent sized move for Telstra, which is a fairly low volatility stock. And what's happened in that case is that the market's kind of priced in worse news. It's managed to beat those lower expectations, and the market's rewarded it with a nice move to the upside.
Now, on the opposite side, we've got the miners that are weighing pretty heavily on the index. Why is that happening?
Okay, so I was actually sent a few tweets on this very subject over the last couple of weeks, and it's all driven by the troubles in the China sovereign debt market. So yields in China are actually at 20-year lows. They actually hit new lows early August. They've rebounded a little bit, and they're trading around 2.2%. So just in general, why would you invest in China at lower rates than, say, America with growth prospects, and even Australia with better yields? And what that means is that the Chinese government is having funding troubles, and that just means bad news for the miners. And obviously, China's been the growth engine for the miners since 2008, all the way up to about 2021. And now that they can't actually just go out and print money like they used to before.
Yeah, you spoke a little bit about China's economy there. Elsewhere, we've got jobs data out locally today. We had US CPI last night. Yesterday, New Zealand instituting their first rate cut in 4 years. What is this all saying about how the global economy is traveling and how we're traveling by comparison?
Yeah, it's definitely a tale of mixed markets at the moment. So here in Australia, we actually beat expectations. There were 50-odd thousand jobs created, which beat expectations of about 20,000. What the analysts are saying is that a lot of it's been contributed to migration, and we actually saw an uptick in the unemployment rate from 4.1 up to 4.2. And what that actually meant is that the rate cuts that were kind of priced in have now got a question mark on it. And that's why we've seen a little pullback in the equities market on the back of that. On the other hand, New Zealand, the market actually priced in the rate cuts, but the economists haven't. And it just shows that it's a tale of two cities. Obviously, the big brother's doing a lot better at the moment, and it's showing in the currencies, and that's why we're doing a little bit better in New Zealand at the moment.
So, what then is the market pricing in at the moment in relation to interest rates?
Yeah, so before this actual new print came out, markets were actually pricing in one definite cut before the end of the year. Now that's gone to about a 40%, 60-40 chance. So it's still mixed now. If I think we have some inflation data coming out soon, and obviously if the companies are reporting good earnings at the moment, so if that translates to good economic growth, then it just puts more question marks on these rate cuts, which everyone was screaming for early last week. But now we're seeing some decent data that maybe we're not in as bad a shape as the market was pricing in.
Finally, Jonathan, where are you seeing the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Yeah, so I did mention consumer discretionary stocks early in the piece. Lovisa actually reports on the 27th, so that's about a week and a half away. It's near the end of reporting season. JB Hi-Fi knocked it out of the park. The market rewarded it. Wesfarmers did the same, and Lovisa's kind of in that trifecta in terms of the market darlings in the consumer discretionary space. So I'm expecting Lovisa to do the same in about a week and a half's time.
That was Jonathan Takadena, head of trading at MPC Markets.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.